Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting...
Oh! Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jack weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the Big A to Z show from the Dave in the City studios in Southern California. Two guests tonight, as we continue to look around us and see the coronavirus dominating our culture in many, many, many different ways. So to help bring some levity to the scenarios, I've got two guests for you tonight. A very fun time. This is, I think as far as I know, this is the first of the two guest A to Z specials. So let's not waste any time. We are now up to the letter F. FanDuel's a big part of the message board at themikefrancesa.com, and we have a little core group from there that does a lot of FanDuel contests. And since coronavirus broke out, for all intents and purposes, the awakening was on Wednesday, the 11th of March, when Rudy Gobert tested positive for coronavirus. And since that time, sports has been completely wiped out of existence, and we don't know when it's going to come back. So, try to commiserate with that. How about two of the biggest FanDuel players on the internet? My two good friends, and we'll introduce them one by one. We'll start with a guy that you guys know already, and that would be Ron in New Jersey. Ron, it's good to have you back. How's it going tonight?
Dave, it's good to be back. Not good to be back under these circumstances, but it's always good to jump on and talk to you and you know, bring some levity to an awful situation going on. But, you know, we're still alive and still kicking, and that's the main thing, I guess, right?
Yeah, at the moment, I think we can happily say we're all healthy for the most part. No, nothing serious at the moment.
As far as we know.
As far as we know, yeah. That's what's scary. We don't even know what the next 2 weeks will bring for any of us. But right now, I can say we're good. So I agree. So let's bring in a good friend of ours. And we introduced him to the podcast for the first time. You know him as Santoro, and you also know him as Toro on themikefrancesa.com, and he is Toro himself. Toro, welcome back. Well, welcome to the show for the first time. How's it going tonight?
Very well. First time, long time, dude.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Now, I understand you've got a little libation going.
Trying, man. Just relaxing, you know, having some wine and just calling in and, like you said, bring some levity to the situation. This is awful.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. I mean, at least you can say that it hasn't been a terribly violent situation yet, but, I mean, it's so early in the game. I can't even go project like, how much worse this can get. It doesn't look good, but we're just going to have to roll through it as best we can. Back to Ron. I think the first question I have is, how's the family situation? I understand that New Jersey was under effectively a lockdown, right? It's basically you've got a curfew. Are you in shelter in place mode at the moment?
No. It's you know, it's the curfew is 8 p.m. every night, or you know, it's technically not a mandatory curfew. It's a you know, air quotes suggestion from okay. The governor, but for all and such purposes, we're you know we're locked down after 8 o'clock at night unless you're you know an essential worker. But besides that, there's really no entertainment here to speak of. Gyms are closed, bars are closed, restaurants are takeout only. A lot of the malls in New Jersey all shut down. Really, it's grocery stores, stuff like that. That's fucking mob still, you know, with just hordes of idiots trying to stock up on toilet paper and water, you know. And you know, the schools are all shut down, so you know, it's essentially a lockdown in the house, you know, quarantine yourself. And yeah, we have all three kids home. You know, everybody's in New Jersey, I think, is for the most part working from home. So it's a madhouse during the day. It really is. My wife, you know, God bless her. She's basically a teacher for, you know, all three kids, cause they technically have, remote learning, through the schools, but really all it is, you know, remote learning, outside of colleges and with the elementary schools and stuff, is the teacher sends, you know, what to do every day through like email. And essentially, you know, it's my wife's job to teach it to the kids. So it sucks. It sucks. You know, New Jersey's getting hit more every day. I think there was another 130 cases, something like that, today that tested positive. It's only going to go up. I know it's worse up Toro's way. But, you know, it's pretty bad all over. And, you know, we're just trying to navigate it. And, you know, it's surreal. You know, just, you know, I looked out my window before I jumped on, and, you know, 9 o'clock at night, it's a ghost town. You don't see any cars on the road. Nobody, you know, doing anything. It's, you know, it wouldn't be that bad either. You know, because you can equate it, especially here. I know you guys don't get it over there in California, Dave, but if we got like a blizzard here for a weekend, or, you know, even when Hurricane Sandy hit, you know, you didn't move out of the house. You stay in place. You know, you got to do everything with the family. But in those situations, there's light at the end of the tunnel, you know, when it's going to end, and, you know, eventually it's going to get back to normal. This is, shit, you know, I don't know when it's going to get back to normal. And, you know, could be a month, could be 2 months, could be next year. I honestly don't know. And it's definitely weird. It's a weird time to be alive. And, you know, you just count your blessings and be thankful for what you have and move on, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Ron. And I think the most frightening part is that it's undefined. We just have no idea. We have no timetable. We have no feel. We don't even know what our personal timetable is going to be like. We don't know if we're going to stay healthy the whole time. You don't know if your family's going to stay healthy the whole time. And I think that is the most frightening part of all, is that we just don't have any idea. And so it's very well said. And for Toro, I imagine you're feeling similar things right now, the things you're going through. And I think Ron is right. You're further up a bit, so it's getting hit a little harder where you are. Can you speak to some of the scenarios that are going on in your life?
Yeah, well, I'm right outside, like, the city, so, and I commute in there every day for work. So, you know, that, like, stopped late last week. And since then, I've just basically been home. And, I mean, we got our first case, I think, today in the city I'm in now, Bayonne. Like, you know, they got a patient at the hospital now who tested positive and whatnot. And it's just like, all right, now it's really coming into, now I'm expecting it to spread in town and whatnot. And like you were saying, it's like, I don't know what to expect, because like, you see people like, you know, oh, I'm struggling, I'm this. And then you hear about like some of these people who are like, oh yeah, I feel fine, but you know, I tested positive, you know? So it's like, what am I supposed to look for if I'm, you know, I feel fine right now, but does that mean, you know, I could be a carrier right now? I think that's what's scary about it. And to expand on like the other stuff we've had on the East Coast, like when 9/11, there wasn't the technology and social media there was now. Like during Sandy, there was no power, so you didn't have the news in your face all the time, you know, and it was sort of like just whatever. With this, it's like I'm stuck in the crib all day and night with nothing but like, you know, cable news. And I go on Instagram, it's all over there. I go on Twitter, it's all over there. I go on the board, it's all over there. So it's constantly in your face with this. Like, that's what's brutal. I'm personally, like, all I did was just stay in the crib, work for most of the day, and then walked over to my friend's house tonight. And I feel, like, more, like, mentally exhausted just from this than from, like, a regular actually commute into work day and then say, go work out and then come home and whatnot. Like, I actually feel more mentally exhausted right now than I would like on a normal week. It's crazy.
No, I feel that completely. And I think you guys probably noticed that I've been very scarce on the internet in recent days because of exactly what you said. It's just too much. It's just like too much, you know, opinion, too much panic, too much politicalization of the situation. Whereas I think it's kind of missing the bigger picture of it. And you're right. It's, I don't know if you can, it would drive you crazy if you were plugged in that much on it all the time. And I still go to the websites to check like what's going on in the news as well. But I can understand if I didn't know Instagram was like that. I would have not expected that. I mean, Facebook, sure. But Instagram, wow, that's a surprise to me. Like, what, or is it just like celebrities getting on it, or what was the story?
No, it's just, you know, coronavirus meme after meme after meme, you know?
Oh, my God. I guess that can get old, too. Yeah. The toilet paper jokes. Yeah, I gotcha. Let's see. So, Ron, what have you kept yourself sane during all this? I mean, I imagine you probably feel similarly about the way that media, social media, internet media, boards, whatever it is, has been treating the situation.
Yeah, I guess I got the kids, so, you know, it takes some of the distraction away, because they're in my face 24/7, basically. So, you know, I can't focus that much on the TV news and stuff like that, but I'm right there with Toro, man. I there's been a couple days here and there where, you know, we'll be doing stuff with the kids all day. And, you know, when I sit down at night and I'll like look on Twitter, I'll be in a good mood and think, you know, I'm thinking positive, like maybe, you know, I haven't seen the news say, maybe, you know, things calm down a little bit. You put on Twitter. And I mean, it's like, it's just, it hits you over the head with how negative and just like, I mean, you know, half the people are, you know, screaming that it's no big deal. The other half are saying that, you know, prepare because you're going to die soon. I mean, it's just, it's too much.
It's too much
to be plugged into social media like that because, you know, let's be honest, 3/4 of the people on there are just idiots. As it is, and are really, they exist there to strictly, you know, troll other people and make other people's lives miserable. And, you know, especially with this shit going on, you got to detach from it, for a while and just try to shut it off, you know?
Yeah.
You got to do what you got to do, to get by. And yeah, you know, thankfully the weather here has been pretty decent. We had a really good winter, no snow. It's been, you know, mainly above average with the temperature. So we've gotten a chance to get out with the kids almost every single day. You know, went for a long walk yesterday. You know, I was outside today with them, playing football in the backyard. So, you know, you got to keep yourself grounded and, stay off of, you know, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, like Toro said. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. you know, it's still just beat you over the head with negativity. And if it's not negativity, it's fighting each other. It's just ridiculous. You know, everything is, I mean, this is something that should bring everybody together. Right. And say like, you know, shit, we gotta make sure we stay together in times like this. And, you know, Toro's right. Since, you know, 9/11 was like a different time. There was no huge influx of social media, so people really did. They had no other choice but to stand together and you know, help each other out. And it seems like with social media nowadays, it's like it's a driving force to keep people apart and fighting. And you know, the world would be a lot better place if everybody just, you know, shut it off and, you know, actually got outside and talked to their neighbor or, you know, enjoyed some fresh air, but it's not the world we live in anymore. So it's like an extra layer to have to deal with, and it sucks.
It does, but I do wonder if social media in general is going to take a hit, because all the people that comment on there, not necessarily followers, but the people who actually write the comments, I really feel like they represent only like 1% of the country. Honestly, it's not that big a group. That's what I always forget about.
I agree 100%, because if you go out in the real world and you have a real conversation with somebody, somebody you meet at the grocery store, one of your neighbors, I mean, they're not beating you over the head with statistics or opinions that, are, like I said, I mean, most of the people on social media exist solely to troll other people, to get a rise out of other people. And I mean, that's, it's not the way that people act in real life. I think hopefully a big thing that comes from this is people put maybe their phones down and actually, create some genuine communication with other people again, because God knows, we need it in the worst way.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I can't speak for everybody, but, last weekend when I went to see my parents, I certainly was way on the phone, way less. And the obvious reason is because there weren't sports, so I didn't have bets to check on. I didn't have FanDuel to check on. I didn't have games to check on, brackets to check on. And it was just such a different world. It felt so weird. But what the end result was, I talked to my parents a lot that weekend. We were chatting for a while. Like, we went for like 2 hours. Like, it was pretty unusual. I mean, Toro, I guess I want to ask you guys, I'm going to ask you both the question. We've been about a week without FanDuel, right? There was an ad to go participate in a simulated FanDuel NBA tonight, and I thought about it. I really did. And I was like, do I want to really do this? Am I betting? I'm putting together players against a computer. Like, I don't know if that made any sense. Did you see that at all, guys? Did you see that?
I saw the simulated game, but that's not really something I think I'd probably get into. Like, at the end, I mean, I guess if I was wagering live on it, I probably would if there was money on the line, if I'm being honest, but I don't know. If I'm going to do simulated, I'm just going to play my own PlayStation 4 or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I do. It's crazy that, like, I think the crazy thing is, like, that Rudy Gobert shit feels like it was, like, 6 months ago. Like, it was, like, a week ago today. At least to me, that's how I feel. Like, I can't believe that was only a week ago.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, yeah, it was... exactly a week ago. I mean, if you think about it, a week ago, we were all looking at our phones to see who's in first place on FanDuel. And really, you think about it, in the span of like 40 minutes, everything's shut down. It's crazy.
It's crazy that we were all in the text at the same time when it happened, too. I don't even remember how it started, but we were all texting while it happened, and I'll never forget that.
We were bitching about the players we had that freaking were in the canceled game.
That's
how it started.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But I know that Ron was saying, hey, I'm good with it because I was winning at the time. He was winning at the time. And I'm glad that held up. I'm glad they paid out to you.
Well, I mean, I was half joking, it's a FanDuel amongst a bunch of friends, right? So, I mean, I don't want to win in any cheap way. I was half joking, and I didn't, I really didn't expect somebody to say, that quickly too, because I thought the test for this take, like, I thought they said, like, 4 to 6 hours, something like that, to get it back, mm-hmm. like on a good day. And really, I mean, he was like ruled out at like 7:30, and by like 9 o'clock they said that he tested positive. So I wasn't expecting that to happen, and I definitely would have rather him had not tested positive, so we life could have been a little bit more normal, and I would have gladly taken an L in FanDuel. But it was nuts. Did you get your money back? Did they
I did.
Give you guys back your... Yeah.
Okay. Toro, did you get yours back?
They gave me back the $5 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's surreal. Like I didn't tell you guys this before, but I actually that afternoon I actually started an Outlook reminder to myself to put out the FanDuel at 4 o'clock local time every Tuesday and Thursday, and then that happened. It was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Speaking of Outlook, because that makes me just think about work, because I'm in that all day on work. It's like even right now, if I want to like delve into work, like all my meetings are like coronavirus prep. Like, this is what you do. This is what we're gonna do if the systems go down or this like that. It's like I can't even delve into like my job right now as a distraction, and that's what I find like really annoying too. Because all my messages all day are like, okay, well, office is going to stay closed until this date or meetings. This is how we're going to handle it. This is who's going to be handling this. This person's taking over this. I'm like, yo, I can't get a break right now, man. I'm like, Jesus, just let me live. Let me do my job. That's all, you know, I understand we got to prep, but like, all right, let me try to find some normalcy in this. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Sure. I mean, I guess for what it's worth, I mean, normalcy when you're working from home and you're not used to it, which is kind of my position, it is weird, right? But you're right. If all the meetings are about strategy for coronavirus, there's just no getting away from it at all.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I work in the health insurance field, so even Saturday and Sunday, I mean, my phone all day long was messages from my company about, you know, really like every hour there is an update. So I mean, I can't even get away from it on the weekends. It's, you know, I don't see that happening, you know, ending anytime soon. So it's, yeah, it's 24/7. It just hits you over the head. And, like I said, the worst part about it is there's no end in sight. Yeah, it sucks. It really does.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're even going to have an idea of where the ending is for probably 3 weeks, maybe 2 weeks, but probably three weeks. Yeah.
That's the problem. Like, there's so many, like, that's the problem, because you have so much, like, disinformation and whatever out there. Like, you hear 18 months, you hear a couple weeks, you hear this. It's like, all right, I don't know what to believe out there, to be honest. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've had a really difficult time sorting it out. I go to a bunch of different types of websites each day, and I can't get a consensus on anything. It's true. I was so confused with those reports.
I know. You need someone to call it down the middle, like Mike.
Like Mike. Is Mike still
I figure this way, right? Because Trump usually, I mean, since the start of it, he's downplayed it. You know, with every chance he gets, he downplayed it. Wasn't serious. So for him to say something like July or August, you know, is when you might see like the peak of it, or you know, that tells me that it's going to be. It's probably going to be around that time. And to me, that's like inconceivable, because I mean, you're looking at like a wasted year. This 2020 is basically a lost year in time, right? I mean, nothing, is going to be normal. Nothing's going to be the same. And, you know, God bless everybody who loves, baseball and still thinks there's going to be an opening day around the corner. Cause, you know, I mean, I don't see it happening. Not in 2020. And when you start talking about that, you start talking about, you know, July and August, you're talking about college football getting, delayed. And then you talk about the NFL getting delayed. I mean, you know, they're going to push everything back. You know, if that's like a best case scenario timetable, we're not looking at any sports until, the fall time at the earliest. And I really do believe like that's the earliest that we're going to see sports. And that's, to me, that's, you know, I know for all of us, like sports is a huge part of life, and everybody needs that. Right. Cause it's a distraction, and it gives you something so you can shut off all the extra shit that's going on. And it's going to be, you know, almost an entire year without sports, any major sports. And that's, I mean, to me, that's the most mind-blowing part of it all.
Yeah, because even when you had something like 9/11, that was 2 weeks, but then we had sports again. And as devastating as that was, it was 2 weeks, really. I mean, the recovery certainly was much longer than that, but But things did start to slowly get into normalcy within the course of a month. This is so much bigger than that, and it's so many more countries than that too. You're right, it's unusual. It's not even so much what's happening, it's what could happen, right? It's not because we don't know what could happen. And just the estimations that doctors will give is positively terrifying. So we don't know who's right. And I guess to go back to Toro's other point, it's just so hard for me to tell who's accurate here, because we are just all over the place. And I do think that even the big news companies are have a little bit of troll in them as well, because you read doctors warn this could be the worst, you know, this could get worse before it gets better. Doctors warn this could be mass casualties, it could be 5,000 deaths or whatever, 500,000 infections. I'm like, okay. And then I go on it today and it's the same thing, and it's like, what is the objective here? Is it to report anything, or is it just to get people scared of stuff? Like, it gets a little annoying to me too.
Well, I think as Ron brought up Trump, I mean, I'm not trying to get political, but I think what makes this different and scarier is this is like the first, like, what's the right word, sort of catastrophe type of thing that's happened since we've gotten into this such a polarized climate as far as things go, you know what I'm saying, with so many people on one side polarized and so many people on another side polarized. So now you're seeing, you know, them play it off on each other, and obviously we put a con man in office on one side, and then, you know, another side, it's a liberal hoax and all that, and it's just horrible because it's still just that sniping and toxic bullshit at each other over and over, over a toxic issue like a fucking plague to top it off. And now it's mind-numbing. You're like, just, oh, my God, please let me check
out. Like, what does it matter at this point, right? Like, what's the point of even getting into that?
It doesn't at all. It's like anyone on the board knows, Twitter, whatever. Like, obviously, I'm a Democrat. I hate Trump, whatever. But, like, I'm rooting for him. I'm up there watching him at these press conferences. I'm like, come on, man, lead. Like, do what you got to do. I'm not rooting against
you. Get out there,
you know,
lead.
What I'm saying? Like, yeah, like, I'm not rooting for you to fail. Like, I want you to succeed, like, especially right now.
Yeah.
Like, I need some type of, you know, like, level-headed whatever figure out there. Like, I'm not actively rooting for you to fail, man. Like just come on, get it together a little bit. Like, acknowledge what's going on. That's all. Stop bringing up how great things are going, because everybody knows it's not going great right now. And, like, just do what you got to do, man. That's all.
Yep. I think all your being here is fair with that. So I think it would be, and Ron, if you wanted to add to that, that's fine. I'll give it to you.
No, nah, I mean, Tora's right on. It's perfect. And again, not to get political, but I mean, that's the problem with Trump, right? He's a president that's made for Twitter, right? I mean, he can't stop himself from trolling, you know, who he conceives are his enemies, and that's the media. So you and to be fair, I mean, they do the same to him, right? I mean,
that's reasonable.
You know, they do this. It's a give and take, because, you know, no matter what he does,
they definitely do the same to him.
It's a pissing contest between the two of them, and, you know, we get stuck in the middle. Because, you know, we just want to know what the fuck is going on, you know, what the information is, you know, give us, you know, a consistent flow of information. And instead, you know, like you guys said, I mean, it depends on the minute, the hour, the source. I mean, you're getting in a million different, you know, theories and projections from every different source out there. And I gotta say, the one guy who's impressed me through this, and I was never a fan of him, is Cuomo in New York. I mean, he's been out front this since it started, and he's you know, every day he's the daily press conference, and he doesn't mince words. He doesn't he hasn't tried to make it seem sunny or optimistic. I mean, he tells it like it is, and, you know, he's, in my opinion, he's been great during this whole thing. And I wish that we could just have that at like a presidential level. Not just with Trump. I mean, with Trump and, you know, all the media outlets that follow him, whether good or bad, just have one unifying message out there. Cause like Toro said, I mean, this is the fate of, you know, our society at stake, right? I mean, just, I mean, nobody wants us to die and get killed by a virus. So, I mean, just put aside the petty bullshit, you know, and just give us what we need to know and, you know, give us the correct information. And I think you'd see like a lot of the problems on social media and stuff like that just alleviate if we had like one correct message to follow. And instead, you know, again, it goes back to whatever side you're on, whatever side you're trying to troll or to fight against. I mean, you're going to pick your where you're getting your information. They're going to pick theirs, and it's just it's never ending, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a sad commentary, but an accurate one. But I did love your point about Cuomo, because it highlights what the states have been doing in contrast to what the cabinet has been doing nationally. And I do have to give a lot of credit to various states for their responses. And I think California has done a pretty good job, too. Gavin Newsom has been out in front in terms of the lockdowns and shutdowns and reducing sizes, but not all at once either. It started like 1,000, then 500, then 250, then 100. And I think at this point we're under 10. Or maybe we're even down to nothing, like it don't do any gatherings. But either way, I think...
Dave, how was Gavin Newsom married to Kimberly Guilfoyle? How did that work out?
I can't answer that one. That's a good question. I leave that one to everybody
just perplexes,
else.
Perplexes my mind when I think about it.
That's a fair point. Absolutely. So I think the states have done a pretty good job for the most part. Okay, let me ask you this. All right, so since we were talking about FanDuel to start, do you remember what your biggest FanDuel win was? Maybe not necessarily the most amount of money, but what was like the biggest FanDuel win that you can remember, like one that you were really proud of? And I'll start with Ron, who's been through many of them in the past. Like, do any come to mind?
You know, nothing jumps out at me, but I'm sure I was the happiest when I finally won an NFL duel with the board, because, you know, from the start, you know, I think my brother started off at, well, you know, it swelled up to like 20 people, and for the life of me, I couldn't break through. You know, I was always outside of the top three right there. And I think one week, and I can't remember who I had. I had three people from the same team. I want to say it was I want to say it was maybe the Buccaneers one week, and I think I had Jameis, Mike Evans, and whoever was. I might have had O.J. Howard, or Cameron Brate, one of those guys, and they all hit. I think the Bucs scored like 54 points or something like that. And, you know, I took those guys, and I remember I ended up winning and being like, just like a huge weight off my shoulder. Cause, when you get into, and I don't play the, you know, the 1,000 people duels or, you know, the public duels. Cause to me, that's just, you're pissing your money away. So I like to keep it to our group. And for the, you know, I just could never break through with that NFL one. And when I finally did, it was like a huge weight off my shoulders. And it's stupid as it sounds, I think it allowed me to get better at playing football, because I wasn't pressing as much. And I wasn't, you know, there was weeks when I would spend like, seriously, like, you know, 10, 12 hours trying to figure out my lineup. And after that, it was like, you know, all right, I won one. I'll take it easy and just go with my gut. And it makes you, I think, a better player when you stop overthinking everything and really just look at it from like a logical point of view. And I think that was probably, you know, in terms of the way I play FanDuel, that was probably my biggest win.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it's tough to win that duel, though. I mean, with 20 people, it can be, the odds are lower, but the prize is higher. That's why it's so exciting.
Yep. Yeah. And it's nice to hit that, hit that first place and actually get a nice, kick, with that prize money. And that's, to me, that'll always be the hardest duel that we do is that Sunday 20-person one. Cause, like you said, I mean, it's, you just never know. You basically have to hit on every single player that you have. And if you get an off game from one of them, you're probably not in the money, and it sucks. It's hard to, to be in that situation where you have, eight out of your nine guys are going off and that one guy has an off day and you end up at the money because of that. And that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah. I mean, I think all three of us have experienced being in a money slot and then losing it at the very end, especially if it's like Monday Night Football and it's the second half of the game. Oh my goodness. It's like, oh no. It's like,
I think I lost like a million times to our buddy ACQ.
Oh my God, me too.
I mean, I used to get so pissed off at him in my head. I mean, I love the guy, but in my head, because every single time I would think I was in the money and he would pull out like three or four guys from Monday Night Football and they would all hit. They would all hit. And he did it, and it's not just Monday Night Football. I mean, he does it for the baseball one too. And he even admitted it. He admitted it, like, especially on the Sunday duel ones where it's for more money and during the baseball season. He'll admit that he'll put guys in there on Sunday Night Baseball, so it gives him a reason to watch. And I can't tell you how many times that that he screwed me out of money. But it's all love. I got nothing but love for that guy.
He's the best. But I will tell you, week two this year, I thought I was in. And this was like my first year doing the duels regularly with you guys. And Odell Beckham Jr. hit the touchdown pass against the Jets. And that literally was the single play that catapulted him from like fifth place to like third place. It knocked me out of the money.
And with ACQ and a lot of guys too, it's easy to telegraph who they're going to take because they take a lot of Giants or ex-Giants or just guys that have been in New York and they know of them so a situation like that. I mean, to have Beckham do it, and I think that was his only big game of the year. It's an extra like twist of the knife, so I feel for you.
Yeah. But since that time, I was able to get in a couple of wins, so I was really happy. Toro, let's go back to the same question for you. What have been some of your finest moments in terms of FanDuel contests?
Well, my favorite one was easily the one where Leo forgot to do the structure for the three at the top, so it was just the winner take all gets it all, so I won the whole. And I won the whole thing. It was like $180, and like that was like really clutch at the time. Like that was like dinner for a few nights. So that's easily my favorite. I don't know. I like the NBA ones because they're just so fast paced. But the fucking rules drive me insane with the game time decisions and not being able to sub a dude out. Like that drives me like. Like, all right, he's not starting. Let me pull him out. Like, that drives me nuts. But I just like the fast moving of him. And plus, it's like you really got to pay attention with them to, like, who's playing West Coast games. Because, you'll get, like, the Lakers and the Clippers, and they're both stacked. And so, people are always taking, like, Paul George or Kawhi or LeBron or Lou Williams or Anthony Davis. So it's like, all right, I got to pay attention to this past, like, 10 o'clock. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously you have to do that with whatever, but like it's specifically even more so with the NBA. So those are probably my favorite times. I'm glad we got the NBA one going though, because it's definitely something to do in this lull between baseball and football and all that stuff. And I don't know, I love basketball, so I'm always paying attention to that.
I got to give you a lot of credit for the inspiration because you suggested it to me before the season, and I'm really glad we did it. Even though it's not a full season, we really had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with it. And you'll notice that after football season ended, we got a lot more people going in on it, so we didn't have to worry about filling it after that point.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad we definitely started, and I'm fine with the 2 weeks. Like, that's good with me too.
Yeah. I know that there were some weeks where I wasn't sure about it, but 2 a week is a good structure. I think it's worked out very well. Now that we have like a pattern, I think we've had people familiar with the pattern, and I think it's now in the routine. So I think even if we, you know, if we're gonna have this giant of disruption, then whenever we get around to doing FanDuel's again for the NBA, I think we'll have our good core. So and it was cool. Like, and I love that, Ron, you were in on it too. Like, and your brother too. You guys have all had great moments in the sun in our NBA duel. That's the coolest thing about it. It feels really, really democratic. Like, Gamble's won, I've won, Toro's won. Like, everybody's had a shot.
Yeah, and you know, with the NBA, like, I haven't followed the NBA in the longest time, and I think, you know, I've always been secretly, like, looking for a reason to get back into it, to watch it. So, yeah, the FanDuel's definitely got me back into watching it and enjoying the games. I mean, I'll watch, you know, I'm not a huge fan of them, but I'll watch the net games on TV, even when we're not doing the duel, just because, you know, they're a fun team to watch. And not necessarily, you know, because they win or lose. It's just every game they seem to play, it's like, you know, 125, 120. You know, it's always a high scoring, close game with them coming down to the end. So, yeah, I've gotten into watching that more and really studying the NBA for the FanDuel, and it took me a while to get into it and get used to like the role players and, you know, correlating the minutes that some of these guys play or could play and the matchups. You know, it really got me back into the NBA, and I'm sad to see that it's we're probably not going to see the end of the season this year, because you know, I would have liked to see, you know, how far the Bucks could have went, and you know, the Lakers, you know, see if they would have got any challenge out west. So I'm sad to see it go in that regards, but it was definitely you know, it was a fun year to do the duels for the NBA. Like, I did a couple spot ones in the past couple of years, and really, I mean, I just, you know, it was like throwing a dart at the dartboard, just putting in, you know, whatever names I knew. And I'll give you insight on, because I've spoken to him about it. I'll give you insight on Leo's strategy. Because he's not an NBA guy. He's like the opposite. He's you know, he's filled with hockey, you know, 24/7. You know, his sons play. He watches the NHL. I mean, you could ask him about an NBA player, and he wouldn't know. He wouldn't know LeBron James versus, you know, Rudy Gobert. He couldn't tell you who's who. So I was speaking to him about it because he has won a couple, and you know, I was like, "What's your strategy, you know, for your players?" Because, you know, at the time I wasn't doing well with it, and I was really struggling. And he's like, "Well, I don't really know any NBA players. I turn on the Fantasy Network at 6:30 and listen to what who the guy says are good players to plug into your lineup, and that's what he goes with." So
that is great.
If you ever want to match up Leo's lineup, just put on the – and I don't even know who the hell has the Fantasy Network. I mean, I know it's available on, you know, our cable, but you have to pay extra for it. And I
wasn't that the
really
one
certain
isn't that the one Carton was on?
Yeah. You know, it's high class when they had a show with Craig Carton on it. But, you know, like, I mean, you had to pay extra for that, and I didn't think anybody ever did. But lo and behold, Leo is an avid subscriber to it, and that's where he gets his NBA knowledge.
That is funny. Good props to him, though. He's getting his information. I mean, he does his homework. I like it. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Now, hockey, how are you with the hockey, Ron? Like, are you as good at hockey as you are with NBA?
I am terrible. I suck at hockey. I think that's, to me, that's the least enjoyable one of the FanDuels, because, I mean, there's just, I mean, you think about it, like, Toro's right. I mean, you know, the NBA FanDuels are fast-paced. You
you know, at the end of the day, the scores are, you know, you're in the 300s usually when you win a FanDuel. For hockey, I mean, I've been in FanDuels where, you know, you might hit one guy who has a goal and you end up winning. it's just, you know, it really does mirror. If you're not into the NHL and you're not into hockey, you know, from an outsider perspective, like the FanDuels mirror a hockey game or, you know, a soccer game. Like, you know, you're an outsider and you're watching a game and it's 2-1 and, you know, 1-0. You're like, you know, there's no incentive there to watch it. There's no excitement if you're not into the sport. And I think that's the same with the FanDuel because, you know, and the rules are so weird. I mean, you know, you could have a goalie go from, you know, negative 10 points and then all of a sudden, you know, he gets a win and he's back up to like 24 in like the span of like 5 minutes and you have no idea how the hell that happened. So it's just, I'm not a fan of the scoring in it. And, you know, just the fact that you basically need to hit on a guy who's going to score at least like a goal or two to even be up near the top. And, and it's difficult. I'm not good at them and, not really a fan of them, to be honest with you.
Yeah. The amount of points they give to a goalie for a win is insane. It's like 12 points. I'm like, what? Just for winning the game? Mm-hmm. Like, what does he have to do with winning the game? Like, sometimes the team will score 5 goals and he wins the game. It doesn't mean he necessarily was great. So it's like that age old question we ask about pitchers. Do you give them credit for a win in fantasy sports? And they do in FanDuel. So this is a really good question. Yep. I'm actually going to ask Toro first. Are you in our MLB duels too, Toro?
Yeah. Okay. I do the baseball, basketball, and football. I tried the hockey once. I just have no frame of reference for it.
Okay. Well, yeah. I think I'll ask in a more general sense. Do you think that they should give you bonus points for a pitcher win in FanDuel?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's like the big stat analytics debate nowadays, isn't it? Like, right. Is it worth anything? Should it count for anything? I mean, I guess if he goes out there and I guess if he wins the game, he probably did enough to earn some points for it. So throw him a bone there. It's like, I don't want a guy who gave up 5 and 5 innings who got a win to be the reason a guy who went like 9 shutout innings not to get points for that. You know what I mean? So it's sort of like just deciding between those. I don't think you should take away from a guy, you know, who really did well and deserved it. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. And fortunately, they do a lot for the quality start, a bonus as well. But I always think that the quality start should be sufficient. Like, it should be some kind of a scenario where if you can go at least 5, here it's in FanDuel 6, but if they can go at least 5 innings and have, I don't know about 3 runs, but maybe 2 runs or less, I think you get credit for that. I think you get some points for that. But that alone should be enough of a bonus. Like, make that bonus bigger and then do away with the win bonus, because I agree with you. I think there you can have a mediocre performance. You give up 4 wins. You can give up 4 runs and a bunch of hits. Another funny thing is they don't count hits against the pitcher. Ron, I'll give it to you to break some of this down, but where are you with FanDuel putting bonus points for a pitcher win?
Yeah, I mean, I've been, you know, both I've benefited from it and I've been screwed by it. So I think over the course of like a year, it evens out in terms of your results, you know, with that, the bonus points for the win. But I'm with you. Like, to me, the quality start is should be a bigger bonus. I mean, if they did away with the win altogether, I wouldn't be upset. I like how they put in the pop for the quality start. And really, if you're trying to match up fantasy sports with, you know, the real stats for the real game, I mean, you know, technically the quality start is more important than the win nowadays with the analytics. And, I mean, considering the fact Jacob deGrom's won 2 Cy Youngs and I don't think he's won over 13 games in a year, in the years that he won the Cy Young. So
Yeah, I mean, if you took away the win, I think it would be fine, to be honest with you, and gave maybe an extra point or two pop to the quality start. I think that's sufficient. You know, like I said, I've gotten lucky on the win, and I've been screwed by it, and I can see it both ways, and you don't really want to, I guess, you know, put that into consideration, you know, when you're talking about winning or losing a money on a FanDuel, whether or not, you know, a guy like Torres said, pitched five innings, gave up five runs, but his team wins, you know, 15-10 and he gets the win. It's, you know, it's basically a cheap win for whoever's got that guy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So pretty neat. Any other things you wanted to bring up in terms of the scoring format or anything else to do with baseball? I'll let either of you take this. No? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm good with how it is, you know? I mean, I guess the pitcher thing is sort of like the big deal. Like, that's sort of the big debate, but
yeah.
Otherwise it's all right with me, you know? Like, if they want to get funky, throw in some points for, like, how many putouts a guy does in a game or assists or something like that. You'll have people drifting. Ozzie Smith type of players over hitters or something like that, you
That's
know?
Interesting.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I'll give you a quick story, about how crazy the scoring can be on the baseball side. And, I think, again, it's our buddy ACQ. I think it was last year or maybe the year before, it was a Sunday night duel, and I was winning. I want to say I was up, you know, maybe like 17, 20 points, something like that. And it was the bottom of the ninth. It was the Cardinals were playing the Braves, and he started a guy on the Braves who was actually he didn't start the game. So he was on the bench, and he had another guy on the Braves. And, you know, I was done. It's bottom of the ninth. I think the Cardinals ended up winning the game, like, you know, 10-4 or something like that. But going into the bottom of the ninth, it was like 10-2. And the guy that he had on the Braves hits a double and gets, you know, however many points that was. And they actually bought up the guy that he had on the bench. And he ended up hitting a home run.
Ooh.
and driving in that guy. And in that scenario, because the guy hit a double, I think he got the, you know, the extra point, and he ended up beating me by like half a point, in a meaningless, you know, bottom of the ninth where they just decided to,
oh my God,
to put that guy in. And I think, you know, in that moment, I think I wanted to stop playing baseball fan school because I was, you know, I was like that meme where you see Zach Galifianakis with all the numbers around his head trying to figure out math. I was, you know, trying to figure out how the hell was I up by like 20 points and a guy gets a double and a home run and I end up losing. But yeah, it's crazy, but that's the fun of it, you know, when you factor, you know, you feel like $1 million when you're on the winning side, and when you're not, it'll gut you.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But to your point, I've been on both ends of that too. So I think ultimately, the more you play it, it feels like the more that sort of thing balances out. But they can be really fantastical moments.
Yep.
Yep.
I think in baseball, with the baseball ones, like, there's no, like, the starting pitcher can, like, really just bury you right out of the gate. Especially if you spend big on someone. Like, if you drop, like, 12 grand on Garrett Cole and he gave up like five in the first, like, you fought, you know.
That's a good point. The starting pitcher,
like, you don't have that impact unless the NFL ones or the you know, the NBA ones where something like that, like, where like a guy could be in the first and he's like negative 10 points, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the NBA seems to be the most fair about that. Like, a guy can just simply have a bad night, and you can still win a FanDuel because you'll have somebody else go out for 50 points. And it's a glorious moment when you get somebody go out for 50 points in your FanDuel. Like, it's happened to me with Lillard. It's probably happened to you with Lillard. It's probably happened to you with Lillard.
Yeah, James Harden, the board MVP.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Harden. Yeah. Oh, man, he was great. Yeah. Remember that one night that we had a duel and like everybody had Harden at the same time and he still scored 70 points?
There was somebody. Who was the guy who hit 90 the one night? Was that Lillard when he hit 50? When he got 50 points?
That's a great question.
Right?
Probably.
I think he hit 90, and I think Gamble won our FanDuel that night, and I think it was he played a late game, and I don't know. I remember I had a couple guys who hit 50. I might have had three.
Ron,
guys.
I think I remember when you had you had both Harden and Trey Young, and they both put up 70.
Yeah, and trust me, that's rare with me because I'll usually hit on one of them and not both of them. But I remember that Dame Lillard night because I went to bed thinking that I was up big, and you know I woke up the next morning and checked my phone, and Gamble called it.
He called it. I want to find that duel. I want to see what happened here and how many points that was, but. That's funny. Yeah.
I think what also sucks about the NBA ones though, especially when there's nights where it's six or seven games, there can be such a discrepancy and like you'd be looking at centers and it'll be one guy's 6,500 and then the next one in line's 4,800. So I'm always with leftover salary. And so I just personally get mad at myself because I'm oh, that's a waste, I got to use it. So I'm trying to just come up with this perfect lineup, and I'm sitting there for 45 minutes all right, how could I make this work? And no matter what I do, I can't.
That is true. It's those discrepancies with the salaries can be really challenging. I end up with Marvin Williams sometimes because of that, and some scrub that barely just got.
No, I didn't even know Marvin Williams was still playing, man. Didn't he get drafted?
I didn't know that either.
LeBron's class or something that, or around there. Marvin Williams, I remember him at UNC.
Yeah, I know. Seriously, though, I was I put him in. And I'm wait, what? It's it was funny. And you texted me that night, when you saw my lineup that had him in there.
Marvin Williams was the second overall pick in the draft the year he was drafted.
Wow. Wow, what a blow! What?
Yeah, so that didn't really work out.
No, man, that must be an all-time bust. Do you remember who picked him? Did you say Detroit?
Didn't the Hawks?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look at that. Yeah, that's a good time. Well, guys, whenever it comes back, I'm looking forward to joining you guys again for whatever the sport's going to end up being. And really, I don't even know what it's going to be. But I figure at some point in our lives, we'll go back and we can get back into the mix. So, I mean, I'm just hopeful that you guys have a decent inventory to use. It is tempting to take some of it out because it's I really don't know when it's going to come back. It's just, I don't know. But I have no reason. I have no urgency for it right now. Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. Whenever I get over 100 in my FanDuel thing, I'll take it out because I've never trusted FanDuel or DraftKings. To be consistent. I don't know. Especially when all the. The legislation was going around and everything, and I just never trusted my money in there. So whenever I get over 100, I'll take it out, or I'll take a good chunk of it out and just leave enough to play for a month or two. So that's what I got in there now. I think I have $50 in there, and it's sitting there waiting. And I actually had a scenario the one time where I deposited. I meant to put $50 in. I think it was at the start of football, maybe. I meant to put $50 and I put $500.
Ooh.
And I was like, shit, definitely, the wife sees that, she's not going to be happy about it. So I immediately withdrew it back to my account, and they suspended my account immediately. And I got this. Just goes to show you how their structure was at the time. It was
you know, a regular guy from like FanDuel, like emailed me, not like an automated email or anything. He was just like, hey, listen, you got some shady stuff going on with your user account. So we suspended you indefinitely and you, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they didn't let my withdrawal go back into my account, my bank account. So I was on the phone with them probably for like a week, maybe, you know, just trying to explain like what I did. And I basically tell them like, listen, I'll put 50 in there. Obviously I didn't mean to put 500, and it went on back and forth forever. And then finally, like, the guy who I was emailing said, like, you know, in pretty nasty tone too. Like, you know, we'll let this slide this one time, but don't ever do it again. If we ever think there's another, questionable transaction, you're gone forever. We have your IP address and blah, 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 blah. Ooh. And, you know, so that, fuck? I think that was
FanDuel, like, not the IRS.
I'm telling you, it was worse than like dealing with like a credit card company. And I think that was like the first, and it was early into like my playing FanDuel. And I think that was like my real like eye opener to say, like, don't keep a lot of money in there. I don't know how people like, you know, bet like thousands of dollars on like the public games, because I would not be comfortable, you know, leaving it in FanDuel or DraftKings. But, you know, you know, it was an eye opener. So I try not to keep a lot of my money in there.
Yeah, that's, I didn't know about that story. That is a definite eye opener for me too. So I'll remember that. I won't be guilty when I make a withdrawal from them this time. No way. No way. That's crazy.
You think they would have, I mean, they've gotten, I guess, more corporate in how they, you know, handle business. So you would think that maybe they wouldn't go that far. But who knows? I mean, I haven't had any problems with them since. So hopefully they got their shit together.
Yeah. I will tell you one really Mongo story with FanDuel. I wanted to see if I could take advantage of getting another account. This is very similar to when I did the fake Ditka on April Fool's Day. But what happened was, I know that Leo was looking for another to enter the contest, and trying to help him out, I set up another FanDuel account with a different name, and I wondered if I could get away with it. And I tried to use like a different email address and so on, and it didn't work, because like after they saw me, both of my accounts in there, they shut down the second one because they knew what was going on. And it's one of the reasons why I think they did that is because when you register for FanDuel, usually you get a bonus to start, and they did not want people to be taking off bonuses for free like that.
I had the same thing happen to me when we first started playing FanDuel, and we were doing the Sunday footballs. I actually had my wife sign up. But I linked it to my bank account, and she played like maybe 2 or 3 weeks. You know, she would just give me like, you know, pick the players, and I'd put it in there. I started the app on her phone and everything, and within like, you know, maybe the third time I tried to play it, it got shut down, and they told me that, you know, because it was linked to the same bank account, that they deleted that one. And then if I ever tried to do that again, that I'd be suspended indefinitely.
Oh, my goodness. It's like man, they are serious with that stuff. Like, they're going to chop your hands off if you try to do that again, right?
Goodness. Yeah. And you know what it was is she played like 2 times and didn't play again for the rest of the year. And then I think there was like another random time where we were in danger of not filling. So I told her, you know, like, you know, for shits and giggles, play. And she went into her app and she couldn't get in. And, you know, I emailed the guy, and yeah, they said, or FanDuel, and they came back and said that it's suspended indefinitely. and that they'll never get it back, essentially. So,
Wow. Like,
it's hardcore.
That is hardcore. Did you ever get the money back though? Like, were they willing to give what was in the account back to you?
Yeah, eventually, yeah. Oh, okay. That was another situation where, like, I don't even know if she had any money in there. Okay. If it was probably, like, 5 cents.
Okay.
But, you know, it was just basically, it wasn't worth like the time and effort to fight with him. I was just like, whatever, you're not playing anymore.
Yeah, we're marked men, man. Who knew? Toro, any other such stories?
No, I did say that, I will say this about, FanDuel and, the sports book in general. Like, they totally killed the leagues for me. Like people hit me up, you want to do my NFL? I'm just like, no, I have no interest. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you get one injury in, a league. Like, that's it. Goodbye. It's over. Week one, week two. Like, with this, at least, it's a fresh start every week. Like, so, when people, people at work or people, whoever you want to join my league, bro, I'm just like, no, I really don't. It's like, I have no interest in doing leagues whatsoever anymore.
Ron, you made that point too, and at one point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's killed the fantasy, regular fantasy for me. And I still do, I'm in a keeper baseball league and a football league with my old boss from work, and I'm basically in it just because I feel like I'm obligated to. But I don't keep up with either one of them, and you know, I don't really take it serious. I mean, besides that, I have no interest in doing regular fantasy for any sport.
Yeah, my interest has gone way down too. I mean, I still do it. Like, I have one group for NBA with some friends, and I co-run a team with Cap. It's probably good that we both do it, because I think if I'm not sure, it would be a lot of work if either one of us did it alone. So having us both run the league together helps in that one. Other than that, not really. I think football, I've been practically off it pretty much from the beginning. Maybe Uber's League, but that's it. I don't do any fantasy football beyond that anymore. So, yeah. Because why? What's the incentive? Like you said, it takes a lot of luck anyway. And if one guy gets injured, see a season. So, yeah. I think that's a good.
I think it makes more sense for a guy like Cap, because he's he's in the baseball 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives him, more. I mean, he's not going to play FanDuel two times a week. He's in it every single day. So it makes more sense for a guy like him. And I always wondered why Fiddle Fids. Never did our FanDuels, because you figure, at least in my experience, a lot of the baseball ones are statistical. You're trying to find that analytical edge to figure out what guys to plug in, and you would think that'd be right up his alley, but he had no desire to do it.
Yeah, he really didn't. I talked to him about
surprising.
It is surprising. I really thought he would. It would seem like just the dream scenario for him, because I often find that analytical approach to evaluating talent seems to work well for FanDuel, the way that's set up, because there's no strikeout penalty. It doesn't really give you much of a bonus for having a great average. It really leans towards being on base and hitting for power. The more bases you get, the more you're going to have, the bigger your FanDuel score is going to be. So it is really surprising to me. And even though I've asked him, he's just never really gotten into it. And it is funny. I agree with you. It's probably the biggest shocker I know about him.
Yeah, I tried to get him into it too, and got rejected. He said, I think he said it just wasn't worth his time. He just didn't have the time to put all the thinking into it. So, I mean, I understand that, he's got a, high pressure job with young kids. So I understand that from that perspective, but you would just think that it would be the perfect scenario for him, since he's such into the numbers portion of all sports.
Yeah.
Would play right into his alley, but to each their own,
Yeah, no doubt. I think it would seem like less work for him, because he's already keen on where people are in certain trends, but no, mm-hmm. no resentment there. I think, if he's got a lot on his plate anyway, so I'm with you on that. Let's close with a couple of random questions, and they come to us from none other than the Junkman himself, Kevin on the Cape. Earlier in the day, he asked what you guys do for a living, and you guys mentioned that you both work for insurance companies, and so his response to that, you guys will get a kick out of. He says, insurance. These guys must be the life of no party ever.
Yeah, he couldn't be more wrong about that. I can tell you that right now.
Do not judge a book.
Let him find out. Yeah, let him find out.
Yeah. That's the I think that's a very good case of perception versus reality, right? So now let's get to the question.
Some of these broker gatherings and like offsite meetings I've had to go to, they're pretty freaking lit, man. That's all I gotta say about the industry.
Oh, is that well yeah, you did post about that a couple of times. That's true. Good point. All right. Yeah, you've had some stories, am I right? You can do that in another episode, but
yeah, I got oodles of stories.
Right on. Okay, so we'll start with the serious question he asks of both of you. And I'll give it to each of you first. I'll start with Ron. Can either of you explain what you do for a living in 30 seconds or less? I'll start timing it. Okay, Ron?
Yeah, I look at numbers all day and try to figure out... where we're paying money that we shouldn't be, and try to save the company money in the long run. And that's basically, I look at statistics all day, and my job takes up about 20 minutes of my day, and then I'm done, and then I'm on the board the rest of the rest of my 8 hours. That's the God's honest truth.
Wow. Man, inside information. This is great. So you're kind of like a fiddle.
You want to know why? It's because the company I work for has really good benefits and benefit packages and stuff like that. So if you get in there, you basically work there until you die. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we had like when I started, we had like a lot of old timers. And when I finally got promoted to the position I am now, the people before me were, on their way out. And they still did my work on paper. And if it wasn't on paper, like the most that they would do is like Excel. Mm-hmm. To them, like Excel was like, 21st century. Like they, they knew the basics.
Yeah.
And I came in there with like a background of Access and SQL and Oracle. I can do all that stuff. So I took... what they would do and normally take them a month, on paper or at best in Excel. And I was able to streamline it to, press a button and it takes me maybe, 5-10 minutes. And nobody else really knows. Everybody assumes like it's still like that month that it takes you to do it. So basically, I have 90% of my day at work is just free time and answering questions and posting shit on the board and, downloading photos of Marquee and I don't know.
What do you think that Marquee is like right now without paper towels to stare at this time?
Turn the fuck up.
What is he like normally? I don't know. I've had one interaction with him, and it was FRA. And, I know I've told this story before, but he came in an all burnt orange Tennessee Volunteer outfit with a triple XL iPad that he was taking pictures with. And, man, whatever you see of him on the board and on the internet doesn't compare to what you get in real life. That's all I can tell you.
That's...
You got to get him on one of these, Dave.
He's been on the show before. It was about 6 years ago. I can link you sometime.
He sang on the show, didn't he?
No, it wasn't on the show. He did that himself. Like, he just posted on the board.
Oh.
I think he was drunk and then he decided to sing Mike's On song.
Yeah, you're right.
I think he tried to do it Robert Goulet style too. It was like nothing you've ever heard.
Who knows?
Yeah. So Toro, same question to you. Can you explain what you do for a living in 30 seconds or less?
Yeah, well, there's like basically two sides of the underwriting, which is you know, freaking going out and finding the risk to write and book premium. Like, the underwriters will do that. They'll talk to the brokers and book premium. I'll do the, I'm on like the operations side where I'll take the premium. I'll have it booked. I'll get the policy issued. I'll get the binder done, which is basically the insurance contract. I'll handle the non-disclosure agreements, all that stuff. So they're like on the sales side. I'm on like the operations side of it. So.
Okay. Well, you guys did a great job fitting. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut in, but you guys did a great job fitting that inside the 30 seconds. It was pretty spot on. So great job out of you both. So let me give you one more question to wrap things up tonight. Junkman asks, would you rather be homeless with an enormous supply of food or have a big house and property but no food or the ability to buy food? Any food in that scenario must be grown or foraged. All right, Ron, I'll go to you first.
I'd rather have a house and have to grow my own food or, you know, hunt it or whatever. You know, shelter is much more important. You know, food is food. You can find food. I mean, you go out in the, you know, in the world and, you know, I got squirrels running around my fucking house like chipmunks, you know, constantly. So, I mean, I'm pretty certain I could trap a couple of them and at least make some food. I grow a garden in the summertime, with, you know, a bunch of vegetables. So I think I could do that. To me, though, being homeless would scare the shit out of me. I don't care how much food you have. To me, the shelter is the big thing. And, that's my answer.
All right. I love that. Okay. Tora?
I definitely take the shelter. I mean, the first thing I think about when, like, homeless and having a couple shopping carts full of food, like, I'm homeless. Like, there's other homeless people. They're robbing me for that shit. Like, you know, like, come on. Like, what chance do I stand? Like, they're going to come and take that shit and expect me to share the wealth. I'd rather forage for my own or something like that. I'm sure I'll figure something out as long as I got a house, you know, the roof over my head.
Yeah, if you assume that the house is accounted for and you will never have to worry about payments for the house, it seems like, to me, it's a much easier challenge to have the house and figure out the food rather than the other way around.
Very appropriate plague question. Who asked that?
Kevin on the Cape, Junkie on the board.
Oh, okay. Very intriguing, thought stimulating stuff there.
Yeah, he's done.
I take exception to his statement about, you know, the insurance being the life of the party because I mean, how can you possibly live up to his expectations? He's been everything under the sun. He's been a sports writer. I mean, he's been. You know, he wrote for national television, started his own food truck. I mean, the guy is like a walking movie. Any job other than what he's seen. I mean, honestly, the guy needs to write a book and so we can all bask in his greatness because, I mean, he's got a story to tell and, you know, we all deserve to read it one day because, He's lived a crazy life, you know, and that's what makes him who he is and why he's such a great guest on your show.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Like, there is no more – probably one of the most interesting people that you'll ever know. And I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good job out of him. Thank you, Junkman. You know, all the love to you and your family too as we go through this. And if you guys haven't heard it, check out our episode that we did at the beginning of the series, the introduction to A to Z. Kevin was prime Kevin. I think you'll enjoy. So with that.
Definitely. Cheers, Junkman.
Yep. Cheers, Junkman. Yeah, no doubt. So good night, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. And Toro, terrific debut. I can't wait to get you guys back. You know, we can talk about whatever. We can get in touch. Wait a minute. NFL news. How quickly can we do this? Do you have enough time to do any NFL stuff, Ron? I can give it to you just for some quick hitters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Oh, okay. So let's just basically, you know, just recap it all. Like, Brady goes to, I don't know if it's official. I think it is. He went to Tampa Bay, and Rivers went to Indianapolis for $25 million for a year. They did a big-ass trade to get DeAndre Hopkins to Arizona, and the Bills did a big-ass trade to get Stephon Diggs, which seems silly. But, Ron, let's get your thoughts on the off-season stuff in the NFL.
Yeah, thank God for the NFL, right? Because, I mean, it actually did give us a little bit of a distraction from everyday life. But, yeah, I mean, the Brady to Tampa thing doesn't surprise me. I actually think it's a good fit. You know, and I think that relationship with Belichick's probably been splintered for a while now. And not splintered to the fact where, you know, to the point where they hate each other, but probably, you know, both guys probably want to, you know, a chance to have a fresh start and move on. I mean, they've been connected at the hip for almost 20 years. So, you know, they both probably want to prove themselves, you know, outside of each other. So that didn't really surprise me. I think the fit is good there since they have the offensive weapons and you have a franchise that will likely let Brady have, you know, a role in picking his teammates. So let's be honest, they play in a pretty shitty, division there, outside of the Saints, you know, who we've seen them spit the bit the past couple of years. So I think it was a good calculated risk by Brady. Rivers to the Colts. They're another team where I think that the fit is good because they have the weapons there. They've put together a good defense. They have a complete team. And let's be honest, Jacoby Brissett is, I think, average at best, and he really couldn't get him over the hump. So it's worth them taking a shot with him. And as far as the trades go, you know, the Bills gave up a lot to get Stephon Diggs, and I don't care. You could have Diggs, Hopkins. You could have Jerry Rice on the Bills. If Josh Allen can't throw him the football, and we've seen enough evidence that, you know, it's likely that he can't, you know, it's not going to make a difference, you know, what receivers they put on the field for him, at least in my opinion. And the Texans, I mean, we've killed Bill O'Brien on this show for years, Dave. Mm-hmm. I think going back to when he was with Penn State. You know, he's just Deshaun Watson is one of my favorite football players. He was going back to Clemson, and I mean, he doesn't deserve, you know, the position that he's in now with O'Brien and the Texans, who have no GM. They let O'Brien run the personnel side and coach, and he's run so many guys out of town. He's neglected certain aspects of the team for years. I mean, to the point where, you know, they had to overpay for Tunsil last year because the offensive line was a mess. I mean, Deshaun Watson, he's getting wasted in his prime. And I would love to either see O'Brien get fired or Watson reach the point where he gets the free agency and leaves somewhere else because he's a guy who deserves to have an honest to God run at a Super Bowl. And I just don't think it's going to happen with them getting rid of Hopkins and signing Randall Cobb to be his replacement. I mean, it's mind numbing when you think about it.
Yeah, it really is. What a downgrade. I mean, you take what arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL right now. I think so. I think they're, and then you replace him with Randall Cobb. Wasn't he on Dallas last year? Are you serious?
He was like the fourth receiver on Dallas. I think he had a couple of you know, healthy scratches in there too, and they gave him $9 million a year for 3 years. Mm. So you go back to last year's draft when everybody knew that the Texans needed a lineman, and he refused to trade up. When there was a run on offensive linemen, he refused to trade up, and he stayed. I think he had two first-round picks. near the end of the first round, and he stayed at those picks with all the other linemen were gone and still took like two small school guys, reached for both of them in the first round, and they both ended up being so bad that they had to give up this year's first rounder to get Laramie Tunsil. And I mean, if that wasn't enough to get the guy fired, I don't know what is. He's awful at his personnel, and he's a bad coach.
He's a bad coach. And we saw it in the AFC divisional round last year. I just don't get what the Texans ownership sees in him. Is he just a butt kisser or something? I literally have no idea why they think he's worth keeping. They keep keeping him.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of life's mysteries.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Toro, I wanted to get your take on the offseason so far as well. Any thoughts?
Well, I think I sort of echo everything Ron just said. I think my prevailing thought now with this DeAndre Hopkins, Phil O'Brien thing is like, if this, Michael Irvin's the whack job, but I don't see why he would make up whatever he said, what he said today. Like, what's the point of that to make that up? So I'm sure probably there's some it's true. I'm glad Hopkins kind of downplayed it, but like going on that, it's true. That's my contingency right here. Like, I don't get Bill O'Brien's point. Like, so what if he got his baby mothers around? Like, the guy's first team all pro, like, every year. So, like, how much of a distraction is he really? Like, is because his baby moms are around? Is that why J.J. Watt's getting hurt every year? Like, stop making excuses. Like, that seems like such a weak excuse to me. Like, what distraction is he? The guy's, like, first team all pro every year. He's doing his job. Who cares if he has a couple baby mamas and they're hanging around the facility? Are they really bothering anybody that much?
Good question. Yeah, wouldn't you guys want to have some baby mamas around? But seriously though, it's really dumb reason. That's a very silly reason to get rid of a player.
And then you're gonna compare him to a freaking most likely guys committed double homicide and Aaron Hernandez. Like, hell yeah, I'd want the hell out of there too. Like, fuck you, bro.
Yeah. No doubt. I agree with, Ron's point where he's hoping for Deshaun Watson's to basically just leave and tell him to shove it. I'm with him on that. I think Deshaun Watson deserves a lot better than that situation.
He's going to get killed 1 year playing on the Texans. I mean, they've done nothing to protect him and, take away your best weapon like that. And, if I was him, I would walk out tomorrow.
It's almost been the Texans' MO since they were a franchise team, though. I mean, they got David Carr fucking shell-shocked. Like, they've never built a line ever.
Yep.
I mean, that's
true.
It's a very good point. I mean, pretty much as far back as I can remember, Chubb would often get killed, too, because he had no line. So it's always been a problem, and yet they never fix it. It's just like so many teams can benefit from a good offensive line. It sounds so simple. It's just that it's not glamorous, and I think that's why there's not enough effort to make it happen. And especially your illustration with the draft there, Ron, was really an interesting study, because it's like it seemed like that was what they wanted to do, but they didn't want to put a lot of investment into it. And that's stupid. That is stupid. You can't take that for granted.
Well, it's the same it's the same strategy that the Giants employed for years, and I guess they still do, is they kind of telegraph what picks they're going to make. And they, at least when Jerry Reese was a GM, they never had like a backup plan if their pick was gone before them. So they would end up reaching for somebody or taking somebody that they might not have wanted. And O'Brien's cut from like the same cloth. Like if he refuses to budge he'll trade first round picks. Like they're going out of style, like during the year to get somebody. I think he's done it like 2 or 3 years in a row, but come draft night, like he refuses to use his capital to trade up and get like a player that he wants. He just, he'll sit there, and if somebody's and it's on him because he's he's basically the default GM there, so he'll just he'll reach and take somebody just for the hell of it. And I think you see that, like, with the lack of depth on their team in certain areas. Even like last year when Will Fuller went down, I mean, they had Hopkins and nobody else. And that just goes to show like how important he actually was, because I mean, he was the only like legit receiver that they had on that team, and he kept them afloat. And, you know, I think it's going to be a real ugly year this year if they ever do play.
Yeah. I think O'Brien's.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Tora.
And I'm going to say it's David fucking Johnson, man. It's not like they traded for Derrick Henry or Saquon or something. Like, David Johnson hasn't had a good year in what, like 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, he was going to get cut. If he didn't get traded, he would have got cut, and they gave him up for Hopkins. It's a highway robbery.
Yeah, that's a major heist by Arizona. There's no question. I think that my takeaway with Bill O'Brien long term is that he reminds me a lot of who is it? Mike McCarthy. Yeah, the guy that used to coach the Packers, because I think the ownership likes him because he's got that golly gee whiz kind of look, and he's got the whole thing with the discipline. And he's such a hard ass with discipline. Oh, discipline this and that. But at the end of the day, he makes terrible decisions. And I feel similarly with McCarthy. There's been a lot of praise. In fact, a surprising amount of praise for to the Cowboys for getting McCarthy. I will say this, it's going to be an upgrade over the hand clap guy, I forgot
Garrett.
His name. Jason Garrett.
Jason
yeah.
Garrett.
Yeah. And it's inevitable that anybody would be. So he's not going to be terrible, but I don't know. I mean, I think it's what the Cowboys need right now, but I've just seen too many bad
decisions. I think as long as Jerry's calling the shots, they're not going anywhere. That's kind of been their MO for the past 20 years.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're right. Ron, in a vacuum, though, what do you see from McCarthy as his ability in terms of his ability with the Cowboys?
You know, I'm with Toro. I mean, Jerry Jones is calling the shots there. I think McCarthy got humbled when he got fired. And basically, I think he just relented to whatever the parameters were that Jerry Jones presented to him if he would become coach, and he took him because, you know, he got fired and really got passed over for, I think that year there was 4 or 5 openings and didn't really get a sniff at any of them. And I think he, you know, so he relented. And I mean, you see that because they bought back.
I gotcha. All right. Well, with that, did Ron drop out? No, he's still there. Okay. With that, I say goodnight, everybody. Thank you so much, everybody. This has been a fun show. Be safe, everyone. Have a good have a good weekend, and hopefully, you guys are all right. So take care, guys, and all the best.
All right, I'm gonna leave you guys.
All right, fellas, take care. That's Ron. That's Toro, and that is our show. Thank you very much. Good times, and hope you enjoyed it. Our A to Z anthology series continues. It was a good time. It was a good fun anecdotes on FanDuel and all the rest. I am Dave Medina. You can catch us on Twitter at DidCow, on the web at DidCow.com, and on Apple Podcasts of Dave in the City Out West. Look for us there and subscribe if you're listening to this for the first time. We will see you next time.